leave. The waitress, Julia forgot her name, was new. She was holding Beverly's bill in her hand. "Don't worry about it," Julia said. "She never thinks she has to pay." The waitress crumpled up the bill, and Julia headed for the door, only to have it open. And there was Sawyer. Julia rubbed her forehead. How could a day be this bad so early? Sawyer was so bright and attentive, even at this hour. She wondered if he ever slept, or if he simply stayed awake all night, pacing with energy and thinking of new ways to sparkle and charm, new ways to get his way. He met her eyes and smiled. "Julia, you look lovely." "Doesn't she look lovely, Granddad?" Sawyer asked the elderly gentleman he was helping through the door. The old man looked up and smiled. He had deep blue eyes like Sawyer. Alexander men were a sight to behold.
"You do look lovely, Julia. That pink streak in your hair adds pizzazz."
Julia smiled at that. "Thank you, Mr. Alexander. Enjoy your breakfast."
"Wait for me, Julia," Sawyer said. "I want to talk to you."
All sorts of warning signals went up, firework flashes in her periphery. "Sorry," she said, and slipped out the door as soon as Sawyer's grandfather had passed by her. "Gotta go." She walked down the sidewalk toward home. She thought for a moment that she saw Emily down the street, but then she lost sight of her. Julia knew she could have driven to work, but with most of her money being funneled into the principal payments on the restaurant's mortgage, gas was a luxury. Sometimes her walks home reminded her too much of walking to high school because her father couldn't afford to buy her a car. With envy, she used to watch all the kids who could afford cars drive by, members of Sassafras in particular, in their BMWs and Corvettes. It was all going to be worth it, this sacrifice. She had to keep telling herself that. She had a whole other life waiting for her, one where she could control memories of her past. When she got back to Baltimore, she would pick up where she'd left off and reconnect with friends who only knew her as she was now, not who she'd been then. Nice blank slate friendships. She'd find a new place to live, get her things out of storage, then find the perfect spot for her bakery. She had worked in other people's bakeries for a long time. When she got her own place, she would bake with all the windows open and make nothing but purple cookies if she wanted to. Blue-Eyed Girl Bakery. That was going to be the name. That Julia's eyes were brown didn't matter. It wasn't about her anyway.
"Julia!" Sawyer called.
She felt a prickle along the back of her neck and picked up her pace. Regardless, Sawyer soon jogged up and fell into step with her. She cut her eyes at him. "Did you actually run after me?" He looked indignant, like he'd been caught doing something uncouth.
"I wouldn't have had to if you had waited."
"What do you want?" "I told you. I want to talk to you." "So talk," she said.
"Not like this."
His hand wrapped around her arm and made her stop. "I've kept my distance since you've been back, because I thought that's what you wanted. When I heard you were moving back to Mullaby, I had hope. But the moment I saw you again, and you gave me a look that could kill, I knew it was still too soon." "I haven't moved back," she said, wriggling her arm free. "But I've been doing us both a disservice," he continued, as if she hadn't spoken. "This has gone on too long. I want to talk about it, Julia. I have some things to tell you."
"Talk about what?" she asked.
He was silent. She tried to laugh it off.
"Does this have something to do with thinking I've been baking cakes because of you?"
"I don't know. You tell me."
They stared at each other for a moment before she said, "I have nothing to say to you, and I doubt you have anything to say that I want to hear." Undeterred, he said, "Have dinner with me on Saturday." "I have plans on Saturday," she said.
"Oh?"
His hands went into his pockets, and he rocked back on his heels with surprise. This was a man who wasn't used to being turned down.
"With whom?"
"I was thinking of taking Emily to the lake," she said, off the top of her head.
"You're showing a remarkable amount of interest in this girl."
"Does it surprise you that much, Sawyer?" she shot at him. Really? She could tell that hurt him, and it didn't make her feel as good as she thought it would. He hesitated before asking, quietly,
Are you ever going to forgive me?
I forgave you a long time ago, she said as she turned and walked away. That doesn't mean I've forgotten. His voice carried after her.
Neither have I, Julia.
The weight of Julia's unhappiness took her breath sometimes when she was 16. It had been building for years, brick by brick. Adolescence, her father remarrying, her unrequited love for the cutest boy in school, the misfortune of having Dulcie Shelby as a classmate. Still, up until she entered high school, she'd always had friends. She'd always been a good student. She'd always been able to function. But then a gradual depression settled over her, like someone flipping out a bedsheet and letting it float down to cover her. By the time her sophomore year rolled around, she'd given up on trying to compete with her stepmother, Beverly. Her pink hair and black makeup were attempts to fight the overwhelming sense that she was disappearing. Her friends started avoiding her as her appearance changed, and she became more sullen, but she didn't care. She would gladly lose them if it meant her father would just look at her. It didn't work. Sometimes she would hear Beverly tell her father not to pay her any attention, that it was just a phase, that she would grow out of it. And, of course, he did exactly as Beverly suggested. Then the cutting started. Her unhappiness and self-loathing got the better of her one day when she was in her world history class. Mr. Horn was writing something on the whiteboard, and Julia was sitting in the back of the room, Dulcie Shelby a few seats in front of her. Julia looked up from doodling in her notebook to see Dulcie whisper something to one of her friends, then take something out of her purse. Seconds later, a small canister of flea powder rolled down the aisle and stopped at Julia's feet. Dulcie and her friends laughed, and Mr. Horn turned around. He demanded to know what was so funny, but no one in class said a word. Julia kept her eyes down, staring at the canister, touching the toe of her Doc Martens knockoffs. Mr. Horn finally turned back around, and as soon as he did, Julia took the sharpened pencil she was holding and dragged it heavily across her forearm. She didn't realize what she'd done at first. She simply watched the pebbles of blood form on her skin with a weird sense of satisfaction, of release. At first it was random, using whatever she had on hand, but it soon became more deliberate, and she started using razor blades she hid under her mattress at home. Every time she cut herself, it was intense and dramatic, like being jerked from the gaping maw of nothingness and back into life. It not only made her feel, it made her feel good. At one point she realized she couldn't stop, that she couldn't get through the day without cutting herself, but she didn't care. She truly didn't care. It wasn't long before her forearms were covered in angry spider webs of scabbed over cuts, and she wore long-sleeved shirts, even on the warmest days. She'd been cutting her arms for months before Julia's father and stepmother found out. It was Beverly who first saw the marks. Julia had just stepped out of the shower one morning and had wrapped a towel around herself when her stepmother tapped on the door and waltzed in, saying, "Don't mind me, I'm just getting my tweezers." She stopped short when she saw Julia's bare arms. When Julia's father got home from work that evening, he came into her bedroom. His face was pinched and worried, and he approached her cautiously, as if trying not to crush her with the weight of his presence. He wanted to know what was wrong, and Julia resented the question. How could he not know? Her sophomore year ended not long after, and her father and Beverly never let her out of their sight that summer. Instead of feeling like she'd finally gotten what she wanted, she hated that they were trying to stop her from doing the one thing that made her feel better. The entire summer was one long power struggle. She actually started looking forward to the school year so she could get away from them. And, of course, the new school year meant she would get to see Sawyer. Beautiful Sawyer. But just a few days before the start of school at Mullaby High, Julia's father told her that he was sending her away to boarding school. It was a special school, he said, for troubled teens. They were supposed to drive to Baltimore to the school the next day. He'd given her only one day's notice. One day. He'd been planning this behind her back all summer. That night, she crawled out of the laundry room window and ran away. If her father didn't want her around, fine, but she wasn't going to some stupid school. The problem was, she had no idea where else to go. So she ended up on her favorite perch, on the high school bleachers. She'd been there a few hours when Sawyer showed up. It was after midnight, but suddenly there he was, walking around the track. The moon was out, and he was wearing white shorts and a white polo, so she could see him clearly from her seat. She didn't move, so she didn't know what made him look up. But he did, and her breath caught, as it did every time he looked at her in school. They stared at each other for a long moment. Then he crossed the track and walked up the bleachers toward her. Sawyer had never approached her before, but he had always watched her at school. A lot of people watched her, so that in itself wasn't unusual. But he was always so deliberate about it. She'd often wondered if that was why she had these strange feelings for him, because she thought he really saw her. He came to a stop in front of her. "Do you mind if I sit?" She shrugged. He sat, but didn't say anything more for a while. "Do you come out here at night a lot?" he finally asked. "No." "I didn't think so. I've walked around this track at night all summer, and I've never seen you, like I do during the school year." She wondered why he walked the track at night. She was too nervous to ask.
"Are you ready for school to start?"
She suddenly stood. Being this close to him made her heart feel lighter. He made her whole world seem lighter. But it was all a horrible illusion. "I've got to go."
"Where are you going?"
he asked as she clomped down the bleachers in her heavy black boots. "I don't know."
"I'll walk you," he said as he stood and followed her.
"No."
"I'm not going to let you walk alone at this time of night."
She stepped off the last bleacher and walked across the track to the football field. She looked over her shoulder.
"Stop following me."
Once she reached the middle of the field, she looked back again.
"I said stop following me." "I'm not letting you walk alone."
That made her stop and turn to him. "What is the matter with you? Stop being so...
what?
Nice to me." She lowered herself to the ground and sat cross-legged.
"I'm sitting here until you go away."
This didn't exactly have the effect she wanted.
"Don't sit beside me. Don't..."
She sighed when Sawyer sat beside her, right there on the 50-yard line. "What is the matter with you?" he asked. She looked away. "My dad is sending me away to boarding school tomorrow."
"You're leaving?"
he asked incredulously. She nodded. He pulled at some of the grassy turf around them. Finally, he said,
"Can I tell you something?"
"Not unless it's goodbye." "Stop being such a smartass." That made her swing her head around. Her father and Beverly had been treading so lightly around her all summer that it was surprising to hear someone willing to call her on her attitude. "This past year, sometimes I would get up in the mornings and actually look forward to going to school because I knew I would see you. I would wonder what you were going to wear. I loved lunch because I could sit in the cafeteria and look out the window and see you up there on the bleachers. I've been looking for you all summer. Where have you been?" Her mouth gaped, and she felt like punching him on the arm. He had a girlfriend named Holly who, despite being in Dulcie Shelby's group, Sassafras, was mostly nice, and they'd been going together forever. People even referred to them as a single entity, Sawyer and Holly. "What's wrong with you?" Julia said. "You and Holly belong together. You match." "I'm just saying I'm sorry I never talked to you. I've always wanted to. I've always wanted..." His eyes went to her lips, and she was suddenly very aware of how close they were, of how he was leaning in toward her. His lips were inches from hers when she turned away.
Go away, Sawyer. Go back to your nice, perfect life.
She felt tears come to her eyes, and she wiped at them with the back of her hands. They came away streaked with her thick black eyeliner. The tears kept coming, and she kept wiping her face, knowing she was making it worse. God, why didn't Sawyer just go and leave her to her ugly misery? Sawyer very calmly took off his white polo shirt and handed it to her.
Go on. Use it.
She reluctantly took it and scrubbed her face with the shirt. It smelled like something green and fresh, like flower stems. When she finally stopped crying, she looked at the shirt in her hands. She balled it up, embarrassed. She'd ruined it. I'm sorry.
I don't care about the shirt.
Are you going to be okay?
I don't know.
And her eyes started watering again. I don't want to go away to school. But my dad doesn't want me anymore. He has Beverly now. The school had been Beverly's idea, of course. Why couldn't she just have kept her mouth shut about the cuts?
I'm sure that's not true, Sawyer said.
She just shook her head. He didn't understand, after all. He reached over to her and hesitantly pushed some of her crisp pink hair behind her ear.
I forgot what you looked like without makeup.
I disappear.
No, you're beautiful.
She didn't believe him. She couldn't believe him.
Go to hell, Sawyer.
You can believe whatever you want, but I don't lie.
Of course you don't. You're perfect.
She paused, then turned to him.
You think I'm beautiful?
I've always thought that.
What about these? She said, drawing up the sleeves of the button-down she was wearing.
She showed him the lines on her arms. Her father and Beverly had emptied her room of any sharp objects, like she was a toddler, so many of the deeper cuts were healed over, but she would still use her fingernails when she got anxious.
Do you think these are beautiful?
Sawyer actually recoiled, which was exactly what she wanted him to do. It was proof. She really was unlovable.
Christ! Did you do that? To yourself?
She pulled her sleeves down. Yes. She expected him to leave her then, but he didn't. They sat in silence for a long time. Finally, she got tired and leaned back so that she was stretched out on the ground. He watched her, then slowly lowered himself back beside her. The sky was incredible that night, the moon nearly full and the stars littering the sky like tossed stones. She'd never been away from Mullaby before. Would the sky look like this in Baltimore? When Sawyer's stomach growled, he laughed.
I haven't had anything to eat since the cake I had for lunch, he said, sheepishly.
You had cake for lunch?
I'd have cake all the time if I could. You're going to laugh at this, but I'll tell you anyway.
You know how some people have a sweet tooth?
Well, I have a sweet sense. When I was a little boy, I could be playing across town and know exactly when my mother took a cake out of the oven. I could see the scent, how it floated through the air. All I had to do was follow it home.
I will fiercely deny that, if you ever say anything. It was such a surprising thing to admit. She turned her head and saw that he was staring at her again.
You're charmed, she said,
but you probably know that already.
It's even in the way you look at people.
She stared at him for a moment. Gorgeous and bare-chested in the moonlight.
Yes, you know exactly what power you have.
Do I have a power over you?
Did he honestly think she was immune?
Of course you do. He lifted up on one elbow and looked down at her. What she wouldn't give to see what he saw, to know what made him look at her that way.
Can I kiss you, Julia?
She didn't hesitate.
Yes.
She was confused when he carefully pushed her long-sleeved shirt off her shoulders. Even though she was wearing a tank top underneath, her arms were exposed. She squirmed and tried to cover them again, But then he did the most extraordinary thing. He kissed her arms. And she was done for. He not only saw her, he accepted her. He wanted her. At that time in her life, at that moment, she couldn't think of any other person in the world who felt that way about her. Only him. They made love that night and stayed on the football field until dawn. He walked her home, and they made promises to stay in touch. Promises, it turned out, only one of them meant to keep. She left for Collier Reformatory in Maryland, thinking she might be able to get through this after all, because she now had Sawyer to come home to. Looking back, she found that she could forgive him, because it had been her fault for putting her happiness in the hands of someone else. It had been so easy to do, though. He'd made her feel true happiness for the first time in a long time that night. How could she not have succumbed to it? But sometimes she wondered if she'd lost true happiness that night as well. And she'd been looking for it ever since. Everywhere but here. Chapter 6. That afternoon, with nothing better to do and no one to talk to, Grandpa Vance was holed up in his room again and Julia wasn't home, Emily started cleaning. She dusted until she looked like she was covered in hoary frost. She tackled her room first, cleaning everything but the chandelier because she couldn't find a ladder to get up to it. Then she went to the other rooms, opening blinds and shedding light into corners that looked like they hadn't seen the sun in years. It was an adventure at first. Apparently chasing the light last night had given her a taste for it, exploring the unknown, learning the story of the house. But she soon realized the story was a sad one. There was a room that had obviously once been a little boy's room. There were blue sailboats on the wallpaper and safety rails still on the bed. Maybe it had been Grandpa Vance's as a boy. Or did he have a brother? If so, what happened to him? Then there was a room with a bed that was twice as long as a normal one. There was a vanity table in the room, too, a feminine touch. Grandpa Vance had obviously shared this room with his wife. Where was his wife? Where were all the people who had once lived here? She started to feel claustrophobic, overwhelmed by the history of this place. She wanted to feel a part of it, but her mother had told her nothing. Nothing. Why? She went to the balcony outside her room for some fresh air. She kicked at the leaves and decided to sweep them away. She swept until she had a large pile of leaves pushed against the balustrade. She set the broom aside and gathered some leaves in her arms, then tossed them over the side. They smelled mulchy and looked like someone had cut them out of craft paper. She scooped up some more and tossed them, stopping this time to watch the leaves fall. It wasn't until they hit the head of the person standing on the front porch steps that she had any idea someone was there. "Julia!" she called. "Hi!" Julia smiled up at her, leaves in her hair, and said, "Bored, are we?" "I'm so glad you're here. I have something to tell you." She ran downstairs and out the front door, thrilled that she had someone to discuss last night with. Julia was standing on the porch with two large brown paper bags in her arms and leaves still in her hair. "I saw the light again last night," Emily said excitedly. "It's not a ghost, Julia. I chased it, and it had footsteps." This revelation didn't garner the reaction she'd wanted. Julia looked dismayed. "You chased it?"
"Yes."
"Emily, please don't do that," Julia said gently. "The Mullaby lights are harmless." Before Emily could ask why Julia didn't think this was a huge discovery, the screen door squeaked behind her, and Emily turned to see Grandpa Vance duck under the doorway. He'd changed his clothes since she'd last seen him that morning, when she'd followed him to breakfast, like he had designated morning clothes and evening clothes. She'd hardly slept at all last night after chasing the light through the woods, and she'd been awake when she'd heard him leave. She'd intended to wait for him outside the restaurant and walk home with him again, but then Wynne had distracted her. She'd followed Wynne to a diner, where she'd watched him go in and vanish in the crowd. She'd gone home after that, and waited for Grandpa Vance there, but when he'd gotten home, he'd disappeared into his room after leaving an egg sandwich for her on the kitchen counter.
"Julia," he said, "I thought I heard your voice."
"I brought you a gift." Julia handed the bags she was holding up to Vance, who looked like he'd been given the holy grail of foodstuffs. "With this heat, I thought cooking dinner would be the last thing either of you wanted to do today. Maybe the two of you could eat together," she said with a significance that wasn't lost on Emily. She was trying to get them to spend some time together. Emily appreciated the effort, but didn't think it would do much good. But Grandpa Vance nosed around in the bags and surprised her with his zeal.
"You're in for a treat, Emily. Julia's barbecue is the best in town. It's all because of her smokehouse. Electric smokers just aren't the same. My mouth is watering already. Will you join us, Julia?"
"No, thanks. I have to be going."
"You're right neighborly. Thank you."
Vance disappeared inside, leaving Emily on the porch with Julia.
"That's the first time he's been out of his room since this morning," Emily said, amazed.
"Barbecue gets him every time."
"I'll remember that."
"Listen," Julia said, "how would you like to go to Piney Woods Lake with me on Saturday? It's the place for kids your age to go in the summer. Maybe you can meet some people you'll be going to school with."
It felt nice to be included. Those elderly ladies this morning had to be wrong. She could fit in here.
"Okay, sure."
"Great. See you tomorrow. Now go talk with your grandfather." Without another word about the lights, Julia gave her a backward wave and jogged down the front porch steps. Emily turned and went back into the house. She thought about just going to her room and letting Grandpa Vance eat in peace, but then she decided to give it one more try. When she reached the kitchen, she heard the dryer door close, and Vance came out of the attached laundry room. He'd been looking in the clothes dryer again. He was inordinately preoccupied with it, which was strange, because just that afternoon, someone from the dry cleaners had come by to take a bag of laundry he'd left on the porch. Vance stopped when he saw her.
"Emily," he cleared his throat. "Has the wallpaper in your bedroom changed yet?"
"Changed?" she asked.
"It does that sometimes. Changes on its own."
It sounded like something you would say to a child. "The moon is made of cheese. Wish on a star. There's magic wallpaper in your room." He probably thought of her as a little girl, she realized, and he was trying to make her smile.
"No, it's still lilacs, but I'll be on the lookout," she said, to humor him.
He nodded seriously.
"All right, then."
In the silence that followed, Emily looked around and found where he had set the bags on the table in the breakfast nook.
"Are you going to eat now?" she finally asked.
"I thought I might," he said. "Would you like to join me?"
"You wouldn't mind?"
"Not at all. Have a seat."
He took plates and utensils out of the cabinets and put them on the table. They sat opposite each other, and together they unloaded the contents of the bags, mostly styrofoam containers of various sizes, plus a few hamburger buns and two slices of cake. Vance took the lids off all the containers. His incredibly long fingers were clumsy, and his hands shook a little.
"What is this?" Emily asked, looking in the largest styrofoam container. There was a bunch of dry-looking chopped meat inside.
"Barbecue."
"This isn't barbecue," Emily said. "Barbecue is hot dogs and hamburgers on a grill."
Vance laughed, which automatically made Emily smile.
"Ha! Blasphemy! In North Carolina, barbecue means pork, child. Hot dogs and hamburgers on a grill, that's called cooking out around here," he explained with sudden enthusiasm. "And there are two types of North Carolina barbecue sauce, Lexington and Eastern North Carolina. Here, look."
He excitedly found a container of sauce and showed her, accidentally spilling some on the table.
"Lexington style is the sweet sugar and tomato-based sauce. Some people call it the red sauce that you put on chopped or pulled pork shoulder. Julia's restaurant is Lexington style. But there are plenty of Eastern North Carolina-style restaurants here. They use a thin, tart,
vinegar and pepper-based sauce. And generally they use the whole hog, but no matter the style, there's always hush puppies and coleslaw. And, if I'm not mistaken, those are slices of Milky Way cake. Julia makes the best Milky Way cakes.
Like the candy bar?
Yep. The candy bars are melted and poured into the batter. It means welcome.
Emily looked over to the cake Julia had brought yesterday morning, still on the counter. I thought an apple stack cake meant welcome.
Any kind of cake means welcome, he said. Well, except for coconut cake. You give coconut cake and fried chicken when there's a death.
Emily looked at him strangely.
And occasionally a broccoli casserole, he added.
Emily watched as Vance picked up the container of barbecue and forked some chopped pork onto the bottom hamburger bun. He poured some sauce on it, then topped it with coleslaw. He capped it all with the top bun and handed it on a plate to Emily.
A barbecue sandwich, North Carolina style.
Thank you, Emily said, smiling as she took the strange sandwich. He really was a nice man. She liked being around him. And he made her feel so small, like there was so much more to the world than just her problems, her grief. This was nice of Julia to do.
Julia is a wonderful person. Her father would have been very proud of her.
I was just talking to her about the Mullaby Lights, Emily said, hoping he'd be more interested in what she'd discovered than Julia had been. I've been seeing them at night.
Vance paused in the middle of handing her the container of hush puppies.
You have?
Where?
In the woods behind the house, she said as she reached over and took the container from him.
I'll only ask you to do one thing while you're here, Emily, he said seriously. Just one. Stay away from them.
But I don't think it's a ghost, she said. I think someone is doing it on purpose.
No one is doing it on purpose. Trust me.
She wasn't usually an argumentative person, despite her mother's love of passionate debates. But Emily had to bite her tongue to keep from pointing out that leaving her a box of Band-Aids last night seemed pretty intentional.
Your mother would get that same look on her face when she was a little girl, he said. She was stubborn. My Dulcie.
He hastily looked away, as if he'd said too much. Suddenly that old awkward tension was back, joining them at the table with apologies for being so late. Emily toyed with the hush puppies on her plate. Why don't you want to talk about her?
Still not looking at her, he said. I get all confused about it. I don't know what to say.
Emily nodded. Though she didn't really understand. Maybe, like everything else about him, his grief was larger than anyone's, so big that no one could see around it. Vance's relationship with his daughter must have been a complicated one. But then her mother's relationship with everyone had been complicated. She'd been a hard woman to know. High-spirited and mercurial, she'd been like the mist from perfume. You had to be content to let a little of it sprinkle over you. And then, eventually, it went away. She wouldn't push him, and she would try not to be hurt by his avoidance. He'd taken her in when she had no other place to go, after all, and she was grateful. So she would talk to other people in town about her mother, find out more from them. Maybe she could find other members of Sassafras. Maybe she'd even see Wynn Coffey again and ask him about the relationship his uncle had had with her mother. He'd said next time he saw her, he'd tell her about their history. She liked that thought, seeing Wynn again. They ate in silence. Afterward, Grandpa Vance again checked the clothes dryer, as if something might have appeared during dinner. But again he found nothing, so he went to his room. Emily went upstairs and finished sweeping. Then she sat on the balcony and waited for the lights. And so ended her second full day in Mullaby.
Later that evening, when Vance ducked out of his room to check the dryer one last time before bed, he paused to look up the staircase. He didn't hear any more shuffling, no more scraping of a broom. Emily had settled in for the night. It was a peculiar thing, he thought, having someone in the house again. He'd almost forgotten what it was like. Emily made the air different, vibrating, as if there were music close by, but he couldn't quite hear it. He was surprised by how much fuller he felt with her near, and he didn't know how to handle it. Being needed was a lot like being tall. It was never really an issue until other people were around. Vance had towered over all the other kids in kindergarten. That was his first memory of truly understanding how tall he was. Up until then, while he was certainly big for his age, he was still the shortest member of his own normal-sized family. Some kids in school teased him at first, but there came a point when they realized that maybe it wasn't the best idea to pick a fight with someone who could knock them over with only the wind he caused by walking past them. His family was gone now. Vance was the only one left of the Shelbys, and he had inherited the existing fortune. He knew he wasn't supposed to have it all. It wasn't supposed to all come to him, the Shelby legacy, the Shelby name. There were supposed to be brothers and sisters who would do great things. There were supposed to be normal kids in his family. For a while, there were. But his older sister, for whom the wallpaper in her room was always pink candy swirls, drowned in Piney Woods Lake when she was 11. And then there was his younger brother, who died from a fall out of the treehouse in the front yard when he was 6. His parents tried for more children after that, but to no avail. They were stuck with Vance. Vance, who was so tall his feet reached the bottom of the lake so he could never drown, and his arms reached all the way to the limbs of the trees so he never had to climb and fall. His parents died when he was in his 20s. He thought he saw disappointment in their faces when they passed away. Their legacy, it was all going to the giant. What was Vance going to do with it, they probably thought. He'd never get married. Who would want him? He was 32 and living alone, rarely venturing outside, when he met Lily. She was related to the Sullivans down the street, and while attending state, came to visit them one weekend. If she'd been a color, she would have been bright green. If she'd been a scent, she would have been new paper. She was happy and intelligent and afraid of nothing. The Sullivan boys, who had taken to throwing balls into Vance's yard and daring each other to fetch them and risk getting eaten by the giant of Mullaby, had shared this story with their cousin. Lily was appalled. She took them by their ears and forced them into the yard and up the front porch steps, determined to get them to apologize. When Vance came to the door, Lily was so stunned that she let go of the boys. They instantly ran away. A few hours later, when Lily hadn't returned home, they cried to their mother that the giant of Mullaby had eaten her. When their mother went to investigate, she found Lily and Vance sitting on the front porch steps, drinking iced tea and laughing. She'd paused, then backed away. Something wonderful was happening, and she could see it right away. No one had ever made Vance laugh like that. Vance and Lily married after Lily graduated, and Lily taught second grade at Mullaby Elementary until she became pregnant with Dulcie. Those were halcyon days. Lily didn't let him stay in the house. She insisted they go grocery shopping together, go to the movie theater, attend Little League games. People had always been curious about him, but that was only because he used to hide. Once he left the house, he came to realize that Mullaby easily accepted him. He was, in a town full of strange things, just another oddity. Vance was so grateful for this revelation that he helped fund playgrounds and war memorials and scholarships. He almost died himself when Lily passed away. Dulcie was 12 when it happened. It was like snow had settled over their world, turning everything cold and silent. It was only Vance's memory of Lily's bright greenness, of her joy and intelligence, of her strong faith in everything, but especially in him, that made him survive. How Dulcie got through it, he had no idea. And that was one of his biggest shames. Vance thought a person could only bear going through that once in a lifetime. Then he learned that his daughter had died. When Dulcie's friend Mary called and told him that Dulcie had been in a car accident, Vance couldn't even speak. He hung up the phone and crawled upstairs to Dulcie's old room, but then he couldn't get back down, so he stayed up there a week, the wallpaper in her bedroom turning gray and wet like storm clouds. He wanted to die. What reason was there to go on? Everything that had tethered him to this world was now gone. When Julia next door finally got to him, he hadn't eaten in so long he couldn't walk. He spent a week in the hospital, where his legs dangled off the end of the bed, and it took 3 sheets to cover him. After he got home from the hospital, there were several phone messages left by Mary. Dulcie had a daughter, she said, and she needed a place to live. Mary couldn't keep her because she was moving back to her home in Canada. She'd hired a private detective to try to find any close relatives on both Emily's mother's and father's sides, and Vance was it. He'd always taken a passive stance in life. He knew that. His height made him shy. His parents had left him a fortune. His wife had found him. Lily had always taken care of everything, and Dulcie had basically been on her own since she was 12. Now it was his turn. He finally had to step up and take care of something. He hadn't done a very good job of taking care of Emily so far. Dulcie hadn't told Emily anything about Mullaby, about what had happened, so Vance was terrified of saying something Dulcie wouldn't want her daughter to know. When Dulcie left, she'd sworn him to secrecy. "Don't speak of it," she'd said, "and maybe it will go away. Maybe one day everyone will forget." He'd let his daughter down in countless ways, so he'd been determined to keep his word about this. And he had, for 20 years. Now he didn't know what to do. Emily had attracted the attention of the Mullaby Lights already. She was going to want answers. He walked to the kitchen in the darkness, but instead of going into the laundry room to check the dryer, he went directly to the back door and opened it. Sure enough, like Emily said, there was a light in the woods in the backyard, not moving, as if watching the house. Vance stepped onto the porch, making himself seen. The light immediately disappeared. He heard a gasp, then footsteps on the balcony above. He stepped off the low kitchen porch and looked up. Emily was standing there, staring out into the woods. She didn't see him, so he quietly moved away. He'd made this mistake once. He wasn't going to again. Chapter 7. Piney Woods Lake was exactly that, a lake in the middle of a thick nest of pine trees. It looked like water in a deep blue bowl, like it could be accidentally tipped out and poured into the surrounding countryside. Julia parked her old black Ford truck, which had belonged to her father, in one of the last spaces in the crowded parking lot above the boardwalk. It had been a long time since she'd been out here. The last time was probably with her father, pre-Beverly. She'd forgotten how beautiful it was. When she and Emily got out, they were assaulted by a cacophony of summertime scents and sounds. Wet sand, coconut oil, boat motors, kids laughing, music playing. "It's so loud," Emily said. "I like it already." "Your mother liked it out here, too, as I recall. I remember hearing about a place in the cove where sassafras would meet and rule over the beach all summer," she said as she swung her beach bag over her shoulder and led Emily across the hot, gummy parking lot. They walked down to the boardwalk and from there to the beach. Because of the crowds, they had to walk in single file. Julia kept looking back to see if Emily was keeping up. Emily smiled the entire way, stopping to take off her shoes, then running to catch up. They finally stopped at a place halfway between the boardwalk and the cove. There were houses above the beach on this end of the lake, large houses with glass walls overlooking the glittery blue water. As Julia took 2 towels out of her bag and spread them on the sand, Emily shaded her eyes from the glare of sun and looked around. "Were you meeting Sawyer here?" "No. Why?" Julia asked as she shimmied out of her white shorts, revealing the bottom half of her red bikini. She left her gauzy, long-sleeved shirt on over her red bikini top, though. "Because he's coming this way." Julia immediately turned to see him walking down the beach toward them. Sawyer stood out too much to blend in anywhere, but the closest he came was here, with the sun and the sand. He was golden, a sun king.
"He's nice," Emily said, wistfully. "The moment I saw him, I knew he'd have an accent like that. I don't know why."
"Some men you know are Southern before they ever say a word," Julia said, as she and Emily watched Sawyer's progress, helpless, almost as if they couldn't look away. "They remind you of something good, picnics or carrying sparklers around at night. Southern men will hold doors open for you. They'll hold you after you yell at them, and they'll hold on to their pride no matter what. Be careful what they tell you, though. They have a way of making you believe anything, because they say it that way."
"What way?" Emily asked, as she turned to her, intrigued.
"I hope you never find out," she said.
"You've been spoken to that way?"
"Yes," she said softly, just as Sawyer stopped at their towels.
"Hello, ladies."
"Hi, Sawyer," Emily said, as she sat down.
Julia sat on the towel next to her and stuffed her shorts into her beach bag. "What are you doing here?"
"Oh, I don't know, Julia," he said. "Bear hunting?"
She squinted up at him. "Is that a euphemism for something?" He ignored that and sat on her towel at her feet. She could see her reflection in his sunglasses as he stared at her. What was he doing? Why was he being so familiar? The 18 years of silence while she was gone, along with the year and a half of cold shoulder she'd given him since she'd been back, should have been more than enough to discourage him from sitting on her towel on the beach, inches away from her bare legs. Yet here he was, and all because she'd told Stella that she made cakes because of him. Stupid, stupid, stupid. "My sister's in town for the weekend," he said. "She and her daughter are staying at the family's lake house. I came to see them."
"So this has nothing to do with my telling you I was taking Emily out here today?" she asked, skeptically.
"Now, that would be too easy, wouldn't it?"
"Everything is easy for you, Sawyer."
"Not everything."
Before she had a chance to respond, he nudged his chin in the direction behind her.
"There's my niece, Ingrid," he called.
Julia and Emily turned to see a pretty red-headed teenager change course and walk over to them. Julia seemed to remember Sawyer's older sister having red hair.
"This is Julia Winterson," he said to his niece.
Ingrid smiled. "I recognize the pink streak in your hair. I see you sometimes in town when my mom and I visit," she said. "I love it, by the way."
"Thanks," Julia said.
"This is Emily. She just moved here.
Some kids over in the cove are having a cookout party, and they asked me if I wanted to come. I'm going to ask my mom. Do you want to come, Emily?" Ingrid asked.
Emily looked at her blankly.
"What is it for?
What do you mean?
Is it a club?"
"It's a party," Ingrid said, giving Emily a questioning look as she turned to leave.
"I'll be right back."
Emily still looked confused.
"You're making this out to be harder than it really is," Julia said, laughing as she patted Emily's hand. "All you have to say is, I'd love to come."
"Like this," Sawyer said. "Julia, would you like to go out with me Monday night?"
"I'd love to," she play-acted. "See? Easy. It's just a party. Didn't you go to parties at your old school?"
"Well, I helped organize parties with my mom, usually fundraisers. And some community service clubs at school used to have end-of-the-year parties."
"What kind of school did you go to?"
"Roxley School for Girls. My mom helped found it. It's a school based on social activism and global awareness. Volunteering is a part of the curriculum." There again was that hint that Dulcie might have done some good with her life. Emily had mentioned something about it before, about Dulcie and her causes. As unbelievable as it seemed, Dulcie must have changed when she left here.
"Well, there's no reason for this party. It's just for fun."
Emily gave her a dubious look.
Julia laughed again. "You'll be fine. I'll be right here when you want to go home. No pressure."
Ingrid came back shortly and said, "Are you ready, Emily?" Emily stood, put on a smile Julia was sure she didn't mean, and walked away with Ingrid. Who would have thought Dulcie would have raised such a decent girl? Sawyer said. She is a nice kid, isn't she? You're good with her. And no, I'm not surprised. Julia shrugged uneasily, realizing she was alone with him now, and she couldn't run away from what she knew he wanted to talk about. I figure she needs someone she can turn to until she gets settled. I remember what it was like being that age. And believe me, I'm profoundly grateful to be on this side of it now. Sawyer was quiet for a moment as he studied her. She wished he would take off his sunglasses. She didn't like seeing how uncomfortable she looked. It was natural, she supposed, to be tense around him. Your peers, when you're a teenager, will always be the keepers of your embarrassment and regret. It was one of life's great injustices that you can move on and be accomplished and happy, but the moment you see someone from high school, you immediately become the person you were then, not the person you are now. When she was around Sawyer, she was the old Julia, the messed-up daughter of a man who hadn't finished high school and cooked barbecue for a living. Sawyer never did anything to make her feel that way, but it inevitably happened. She could blame a lot of things on him, but not that. "Why don't you take off your shirt?" he finally asked. "I bet you say that to all the girls." When he didn't respond, she said, "You know why." She reached over to her beach bag for a bottle of water, but Sawyer caught her arm. He held her arm and slowly pushed the sleeve up. It took great effort not to snatch her arm away. She had to remind herself that he'd seen them before. Most people had. She couldn't hide them all the time. He trailed his thumb over the scars. Some were as thin as wire. Others were thick and raised. It was a surprisingly tender thing to do, and it made her heart ache just a little. "Who did you turn to when you were her age, Julia?"
"You."
"No one. That's how I know." She slid her arm out of his grasp. "I don't like to get sun on them. A tan makes them look worse."
"Did you ever feel like you could turn to your dad or your stepmother?"
"Dad didn't know what to do with me. And Beverly considered her job taking care of Dad, not being a mother to me. But she was the one who convinced him to send me away to school. I'll always be grateful for that. Leaving this place probably saved my life."
"And you can't wait to leave again," he said.
6 months and counting." He sprawled out on his side in front of her, his head propped on his hand.
"So, what time should I pick you up?"
"Pick me up for what?" she said as she found her bottle of water and took a sip.